Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Charles Lipsum, Michael Lotus, Dave Lundy, and Mike Miller. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment or question, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And you can join us on the World Wide Web, beyondthebeltway.com. That's the audio and video portion live every Sunday night. And again, if you miss it on Sunday night, it's there for weeks or months or years to come. There are 64 days to go before Election Day. We have lots to talk about. It was a very busy week last week. But there are many people in this country who they still don't quite enthusiastically support one of the major candidates. And maybe they're thinking about going with a third or fourth party candidate. So I want to begin tonight. We've got a couple of partisans here tonight, and I know how they will answer this question. But we have some people that are less partisan. They happen to be professorial types who are with us tonight. Charles Lipsum, the question I ask to you is, between the two major party candidates, Clinton and Trump, who is the least scary to you as the president of the United States for the next 4 years?
Hillary's the least scary because she's simply corrupt and a liar, whereas
you're Trump, the nonpartisan.
Whereas Trump, I think, his populist, right-wing populism, his lack of interest in public policy, his racial epithets and ad hominem attacks scare me, actually.
Mike Miller of DePaul University, your answer to the same question.
I couldn't say it better. Hillary Clinton is so flawed. She is corrupt and she's a liar. I will never believe anything comes out of her mouth for the next 8 years or
so
4 years. But she's the
least
of the two. Of the two.
That's the question.
And it's because of that I'm going with Gary Johnson, who I think would be just fine as president, would get nothing done because he would have to fight the Congress and so forth.
Dave Lundy, you are the card-carrying Hillary supporter tonight, so I know your answer to the question, but why?
Why am I an enthusiastic supporter
of
Hillary?
Yes, why are you an enthusiast? And by the way, am I correct that you are an enthusiast? Because generally speaking, when you've been on this program, you have had the ability, and I've always appreciated, you've had the ability to speak critically of Democrats. And yet you are a strong Democrat. You're supporting Hillary Clinton. In this particular case, how enthusiastic are you?
Oh, well, I'm quite enthusiastic. I will tell you that contrary to the assertions that my nonpartisan colleague, Professor Lipsum, just made, I actually do not believe Hillary is fundamentally corrupt, nor do I believe she is fundamentally dishonest. I think that she is... of course. This is a woman who has devoted her entire career around a series of issues about supporting children, supporting women, advancing the United States, advancing progressive causes. And this is true whether it was when she
are
was...
You're going into spin right now. I want to get Michael Lotus... I want to get Michael Lotus involved. Michael Lotus, you are our Trump supporter tonight.
That's correct.
So
I
you
support
are enthusiastically supporting.
I'm enthusiastically supporting the Republican nominee as the only person who can stop Hillary Clinton from appointing Supreme Court justices, from continuing the 8 years of devastation to our economy of Obama's failures, which has been ruinous for the tens of millions of people who can't get work, especially African Americans and Hispanics, who she purports to represent. She's supposedly so wonderful for women, but she enabled her husband, who's attacked women. She's the one who said that a rape victim is entitled, yada, yada, to be believed.
Okay.
Hillary Clinton's dishonest and should be stopped.
So what happens, and I want to ask, I'm going to start with you, Mike Miller. What happens to the body politic if Hillary wins, and what happens to the body politic if Donald Trump wins? Look into your crystal ball.
If Hillary wins, the big battle is going to be over the Supreme Court and how strong the Senate, which I think will remain Republican, how hard they're going to fight against it.
Charles Lipsum, same question. What happens to the body politic, depending on who wins, is life in America going to be far worse under one candidate than under the other?
There's upside under a possibility of a Trump, but there's a lot of potential downside. Well, I think that the upside is that the tax cutting and a Supreme Court that is more friendly to decentralization, but there's a lot of risk. I think under Hillary, and I think this campaign has highlighted the problem with both candidates, I think that there have been few times that I can remember in American history when public confidence in our collective institutions has been lower.
Dave Lundy, my question to you. If Donald Trump got elected, is there anything positive that could come out of that in the first year of his presidency?
No.
Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing. And I have to tell you, I appreciate that both Mike and Charles have said that the risks are higher under a President Trump. The idea of Donald Trump as commander-in-chief, a man with impulse control problems in charge of the world's most powerful military, scares the bejesus out of not just me and not just you guys, but out of pretty much every GOP foreign policy establishment leader, many of whom have come out and endorsed Hillary Clinton or at least said you cannot vote for Donald Trump.
What about it, Michael?
Those are the exact guys who got us into the wars we failed at that have killed tens of thousands of Americans and tens of thousands of foreigners. No, let me finish, Dave. And the ruins of that foreign policy, 8 years of Bush and 8 years of Clinton, is what Trump's supporters are repudiating. Hillary Clinton is continuing with that. She is a disaster, and we need to break with that past and move in a different direction.
The problem with that argument is that although a lot of the people who – the 50 Republican leaders who signed the letter against Trump and for Clinton did do the things you say, a lot of other people – did not. Moreover, Trump himself has shown very little subtlety or interest in foreign policy. He's made casual statements about South Korea and Japan getting nuclear weapons. I had dinner with the only other three conservative people at the American Political Science Association convention. If a truck had hit us, there would have been none left out of the thousands there. And there was only one who was a Trump supporter for the reasons that I've just stated.
Mike?
I agree that Hillary would be better with the military, but I think she's going to continue Obama's activities. She has such bad judgment. You talk about how you think that she's not corrupt. She's absolutely corrupt. She lies, and she has terrible judgment. If you have nothing else, just look at the emails. This was terrible judgment. And you mentioned about her and women. Ask that to Juanita Broderick and all the other women that she smeared and destroyed when she and her husband were trying to keep power. Power is all that she cares about. That's a very dangerous woman to be president.
All right, we're going to get your reaction, Dave, and as well as everybody else, 1-800-723-8289, from coast to coast and border to border. When we come back, we're also going to talk about the trip to Mexico and the speech in Phoenix and some of the recent decisions by the FBI in releasing information, more information about Hillary's emails. All coming up as Beyond the Beltway continues from Chicago, 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. And before the break, Mike Miller laid out a litany of challenges to Hillary Clinton's credibility. And Dave Lundy, you're here to respond.
Well, look, I think that when you guys on the right love to talk micro about, you know, this Clinton scandal, there was this woman and Hillary had a negative role. And I'm more interested in society as a whole. And I'm more interested in looking at what Hillary has done and will continue to do going forward. And if you look at it, whether it's when she went to Beijing at the conference on women and talked about the importance of women's rights in a country that there were none, whether it's the work that she's done with kids, I just think that you look at the quality of how she is respected. If you look at how she is viewed around the world by other leaders, the reason most Republicans I know are they think she's a liar and they think she's corrupt, and I've heard all of that, but they don't fear her the way that they fear Trump, because they don't know what Trump is going to do with all that power. I mean, you're talking about a guy who went down to Mexico, and his first foray in diplomatic relations, he got into a lying spat with the Mexican president, where the Mexican president said, no, of course we talked about the wall. I told him I'm not paying for his wall. Trump said, no, we never talked about it. They come home, and Trump gives this red meat speech in Phoenix.
But again, but Dave,
how do you know that the president was right and Trump was wrong?
I want to come back. By the way, I just want to comment on that. I think whenever two leaders get together, the first group they're concerned about is the constituents that can vote for them. Mm-hmm. So it would not surprise me if the president of Mexico said, whether it was real or not, mm-hmm. whether he would send this out, the tweet out, that he told Donald Trump, he stood up to Donald Trump in a tweet by saying that, you know, we're not going to pay for the wall. I understand the politics of that. Now, who was right and who was wrong? I think that's sort of inconsequential in the bigger, broader issue. But I want to pick up something that you talked about the impact on society in general. And my question would be is, you are maybe amongst a small minority who thinks that Hillary Clinton is telling the truth and is not corrupt at this moment in time. I would say that at this moment in time, we have a demonstrated candidate, an elected candidate or a running candidate, who is lying and has a history of lying, of hiding her true beliefs, of not talking to the press, not answering questions. And we have a legacy of her in that role. Mm-hmm. And her husband, when he was president for 8 years, we have a legacy, at least for a portion of those years, that he was a cheat. So when we think of the Clinton family and the Clinton contributions to the body politic, we have a cheating president and we have a lying person who is his wife who's now running for president. Where am I wrong in being blunt? And by the way, I will take a lot of you-know-what for saying what I just said. But there's a lot of people who think that way. What is that? What about the children growing up? Are we supposed to admire someone who does not tell us the truth?
Well, I feel very proud that I'm so deeply outnumbered on this show by everybody around the table thinking that Hillary Clinton is a liar. For the record, the most recent polling shows that the same percentage of people think that Donald Trump is trustworthy as think that Hillary Clinton is.
Okay.
And let's talk about the fact this is not a parliamentary.
We're not supporting.
No, hang on. This is not a parliamentary.
I just want to address
this. This is not a parliamentary democracy. You have a choice in this election. You are choosing, Mike, to support a man who will never be elected president. Okay? You have a choice, and you're choosing
the right
other
to vote.
Guy.
And you're so telling me my vote.
From my
that
perspective,
I have to,
this is a binary.
I can only vote for somebody who can win.
This is a binary choice, and you have to pick one of these two people. Is
no,
going
it isn't.
Dave.
There's
just
four people.
Wait,
right.
Dave. You're a father. I'm a father. I think we have fathers at this table. What do we want our children, our grandchildren? How do we want them to look up to the leaders? And by the way, and I'm not here to defend Donald Trump. He's done all kinds of things. He has not conducted himself in a way that I admire. But let's look at what I believe to be the facts. And that is, she is not telling the truth. She has a history of lying. Her husband has a history of cheating.
And Donald Trump has a history of establishing scams against innocent people.
Just a minute. Let's speak to... When I was a kid... My parents taught me if you lie or you cheat, that's absolutely wrong. It seems to me we live in a society now, and this is the societal issue that I'm talking about. It seems to me we live in a society now where we reward people who lie and we reward people who cheat. We give them hundreds of thousands of dollars to speak to foreign to corporations.
I'm sorry, Bruce. This is ridiculous. What you are saying is ridiculous because
why?
No. Because by you are suggesting that everything that Hillary is doing related to whether it's the speeches is about lying. I mean, look, I hire speakers. You hire speakers. You pay what the market charges you. I have been in worked for an organization.
She lies about her emails. She lies about her emails. She lies about whether or not she had access to confidential information.
No,
we're
Bruce,
told for years
no,
how smart
stop,
she is. She
stop.
Doesn't know what a C
Look,
means on a paper.
No, I'm sorry. The FBI report, which I have here and have read this document, says that first of all, what most people don't realize is that all these emails, everybody's envisioning the way we email,
yes.
It goes to a lot of people. There were 13 people. There were 13 people who she communicated with through this email server, all of whom
On 15 BlackBerries.
All of whom were internal.
She said she had two.
No, one device at a time.
She went to the UN and made a series of statements, all of which have now been proven false. If you listen to what Dave is saying, actually, I agree with part of it. I agree that it's a binary choice. But what I don't agree with is what I think is his shiny object approach, which is as soon as you ask him to actually defend the honesty of his candidate, he actually puts up the shiny object, which is that Trump is not a very honest or trustworthy person either. I agree with that, but I don't by definition, because I think Trump is dishonest, think that Hillary Clinton tells the truth. If she tells the truth, it's only by accident.
It is.
Michael.
Yes.
Your reaction.
I actually agree with Dave on this much. This is a binary decision. You have to pick one of these two candidates or you're wasting your vote. Hillary Clinton has been dishonest about substantive matters that impact the country and its future. One really important one is that she had confidential information on a server that was accessible, in the words of Robert Gates, former CIA director, to every competent intelligence agency in the world. That disqualifies her from the presidency.
Now let me ask you the father question. When we're talking about Donald Trump, okay, he speaks improperly about minorities. He uses the wrong word or is not precise in his language. He creates an image that perpetuates and I believe feeds some of the darker elements of society. Mm-hmm. He does that, okay? And that's how we got ahead. Now, whether he's been good, bad, or indifferent in business, I mean, would you acknowledge that as a father and as a parent, you're not exactly proud of the life that Donald Trump has led and the way he chooses to articulate his political position? So that's sending a signal that if you're loud and you're brash and you've got a few bucks, you can get away with a lot in this country, and you maybe even get a lot of votes.
Maybe I'm unusually cynical, and maybe we all are because we live in Chicago, but I've never treated politicians as sort of moral exemplars for myself or my children or anybody else, okay? So I don't see that, you know, I hold these guys up as we know the history. All of these guys make all kinds of compromises in the course of successful political careers. That while I'd prefer that they be wonderful moral characters, that doesn't worry me that much. As far as his supposed, you know, racial epithets and so on, it's interesting. The first
supposed?
No, let me finish, Dave. Let me finish. The first speech he made, he backed off of, and he should have. It was over the top, and he shouldn't have spoken about the Mexican people the way he did. He has never – I can't see – I've listened to many – when has he ever said anything remotely hostile about African Americans? All he has ever said is they need jobs and their neighborhoods need to be safe, and the Democrats have imposed this devastation on millions of African Americans through their rotten policies.
He's never said anything bad about black people. I want to say something here, and again there may be people who are listening to this evening who can look this up right as we speak. In the description of Donald Trump's initial announcement for president, when he talked about that Mexico doesn't send us their best, they send us the rapists, the murderers, and sometimes some a few. In the way that's always been articulated, or the way that you've heard him say it on camera, it comes across one way. Last week, I saw in writing for the first time. I really saw it, you know, the speech is out there so much, you don't have to read about it very often. But when he talked about their rapists, he wasn't talking T-H-E-I-R, their rapists, meaning Mexico's rapists. The way it was in the story that I read, T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E, they are rapists. There's a big difference between those two words, Professor.
Oh, yes, there are. Words make all the difference in the world. Absolutely.
But have you noted, have you ever seen, have no, you, has I that ever come know. To your anybody's attention? What do you think he said?
I listened to him, Bruce, when he attacked a judge for being of Mexican heritage.
Stupid.
And then Newt Gingrich defended the judge as being from Indiana. It doesn't matter where the judge is from. He's a U.S. citizen. He's a federal judge. This is rank racism. And I think he, although he has not spoken negatively about blacks, that's part of the reason why they're fearful of a Trump presidency.
And he's also a Republican. There's a
general that, too.
There.
Absolutely.
1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back with your calls, I promise, when we roll on from Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and we've got callers on the line. Let's go to Boise, Idaho. KBOI is the great station out there, and Bob is listening tonight. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Boy, you guys covered a lot of ground since I was on hold, but yeah. I think what I'd say to you now is the Democrats and the liberals want to totally dismiss anybody's opinion except their own and claim that they have all the knowledge and nobody else can have anything to say unless they agree with them, because obviously they're racist or homophobic or whatever. And when you look at Hillary Clinton's record, the reality of her life, and you see what she's done, you see that she's a liar, she's after power, she protects her own.
Right.
Even now when they're saying they're going to get out of the Clinton Foundation, their daughter is still going to run part of it.
Bob, I'm going to interrupt you for a moment because Dave Lundy wants to respond to that. He is the official, not from the campaign, but he's a Clinton supporter, so we'll let you respond to that.
I just think that the idea that we're attacking Hillary Clinton because she wants what she wants, and that if I disagree with you, I shouldn't believe you as much as if I agree with you. I mean, geez, looking around the table, the two of the gentlemen
on the table.
What I'm talking about is obviously partisans agree with
people. Hillary Clinton's a liar.
But let's let Dave respond.
You are entitled to your opinion. You are entitled to your opinion that Hillary Clinton is a liar. The fact is, you asked, what has she accomplished? And I will tell you that she has a multi-decade career of public service that is in support of women and children and progressive causes. When she was in the United States Senate, she partnered with some of the most right-wing Republicans in order to move forward legislation.
Like what?
The Clinton, what's that? She partnered with Orrin Hatch. I forget what the bill was.
What was the legislation?
What's amazing is
Bob, we're going to let our
piece of legislation.
Well, that's why I was
actually done.
Okay, thanks for your call. By the way, do you know the answer? Because I wanted Dave to.
Yes, I do.
Okay, what is the legislation? What is the accomplishment?
What she partnered on was health care legislation that covered children. And the story is, well, this was
what
when
about
she
a
was in the
what
White
about,
House.
What about a Secretary
actually,
of State?
She,
what about
she,
a Secretary of State?
She's accomplished. She not only didn't accomplish anything, she made huge errors. She has a great resume of positions she's held, but not a lot of accomplishments. I won't say none, but Russian reset, Libya.
I want to go back to the Clinton supporter here. What are the accomplishments as Secretary of State?
Sure. Coming off of the disastrous Bush War and the decline in U.S. opinion, in the opinion of the U.S. around the world under President George W. Bush, okay. Hillary Clinton worked very hard and was very successful in raising the impression of the United States around the world.
Where?
It's not simply true.
It's the way you calculate it.
No. The studies done by political scientists and pollsters of how well the United States is regarded are now as low or lower than they were during the Bush administration. And there hasn't been any change in the kind of policies that Obama's pursued as foreign policy since she left. The main problem, though, is that at the very outset of her administration, Obama made the decision, she went along with it, that they would basically pull out on a time schedule from Iraq where they had set essentially, they had stabilized the war. That set in motion both the rise of ISIS and the domination of Iran in the region.
Yep. Gentlemen, we're going to. Do you have a comment, Mike?
Absolutely. That's exactly how I remember it, Charles.
All right. We're going to go to Boston now. Boston, John, you're listening to us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Nice to hear from you tonight.
Hey, thank you. I'm actually a first-time caller and first-time listener to the show.
Thank you.
And it's a great show. I want to point out, I myself was a Obama voter in 08, sat out the election in 2012. I'm the son of an immigrant. I'm Hispanic. I guess you'd consider a millennial. I'm going to be voting for Donald Trump.
Why?
And the reason I'm going to vote for Donald Trump is because I've watched as our country basically has gone from the importance put on Americans first and citizens of this country to the importance put on illegals, foreigners, anybody but Americans. And I myself, I've lived in Hispanic communities in New York, in Boston. I'm a part of the Hispanic community. I speak Spanish fluently. And I can tell you, there's a hidden vote out there that you guys are not picking up on. Mm-hmm. I know Guatemalans, Central Americans, even Mexicans, South Americans who are legalized citizens who have put their blood, sweat, and tears into their communities and are watching as these communities are torn down by gang members and those very rapists and everything else that Donald Trump was talking about. He is not very eloquent, but he has touched upon something. And I think to ignore that is to ignore a reality. And I really think Mr. Lundy, for instance, is going to be very unpleasantly surprised at the results of the election just by my, I guess you could say, polling of talking to people from the Hispanic community and just people I know. And
John, let me ask you, have you had any response from your close friends in the wake of the speech in Phoenix earlier this week on the same day he went to Mexico?
Well, so, you know, like what I was saying was actually I think if he had gone back on some of his things, so they, for instance, the wall, mm-hmm. and saying that he's going to deport criminal aliens first and then eventually people who are abusing the welfare system, et cetera, I think if he had gone back on that, people were saying they were going to not go vote. After the speech, the people I know are even more so interested in voting for him. And like I said, I mean, the particulars is there's a lot of nuance to the Hispanic community, and even within the Mexican community. I mean, there's a lot of different people. I mean, you have people who have come over here illegally. You have people who have come here legally. And then you have people who have been here since before, you know, the United States even had mm-hmm. California as a country, and they consider themselves Americans, not Mexicans. So mm-hmm. I just think this okay. like idea that like the Hispanics are automatically going to vote Democrat is a flawed one. So
Stay on the line. Let me ask a question. I want to get everybody's reaction. I'll start with you, Dave Lundy. The speech in Phoenix the other day, the media was criticizing him because he went to Mexico. He looked presidential. Even the critics were somewhat, not effusive, but acknowledging that he looked pretty good down there. Then he comes back and he throws the red meat out to his crowd in Phoenix. But in that speech, in the end of that speech, it wasn't at the beginning of the speech, at the end of the speech, he made a clear shift when he said that they were not going to deport all of the others that are in this country who have not committed a crime. He was going to focus on those who have committed crimes, criminal illegal aliens, and those that violated, let's say, welfare laws. Now, as a taxpaying American, do you object to that?
No, it's existing U.S. policy, that at least as far as criminal aliens. And in fact, let us not forget. No, stop, Mike. Let us not forget that Barack Obama has got the nickname in the Latino community as deporter in chief, because he has deported more people in the last 8 years than the previous presidents have. So that's just a fact. When Donald Trump started to revise his position, one of his 8 positions over the last 2 weeks, he first said, well, what I want to do, people don't realize that Barack Obama has been doing this very same thing. So we would like to execute the existing laws. It was when he was kind of feeling around for what his position should be. I still don't know.
His position was, though, by the way, and by the way, I will acknowledge, I think you were correct. The deporter in chief is a tag that Hispanics have put on Barack Obama. And there have been significant drops in border crossings during the last 8 years. Absolutely. I've said that on this program. It seems to me that what he's saying in that speech is, I'm going to do it faster. I'm going to do it faster, and I'm going to go after. Especially, he expanded to welfare cheats. Now, again, the media didn't necessarily play it that way. The media played it. Oh, he was hardlining again.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't get into the nuance that if you're out there and you have and your only crime or your only law is sneaking into the country, you're not going to be home scot-free. You're not going to be a top priority of the Trump administration.
It was funny. I listened to that speech, and the next day I'm hearing, oh, this is the red meat. I picked up on the fact that this seemed to be a – he basically said, I went to Mexico. I talked to the president. He didn't back off on the wall. But he started to talk about securing the border and a border security with
right.
a wall, which is obviously reasonable, which is how it has to be. But he said he's going to focus on criminal aliens and people who are – and then he said, then when we've got that done, then we're going to kind of reassess where we're at, which is obviously what you'd have to do anyway. You have 11
right.
million people. You can't – even if you
right.
were determined to deport 11 million people, it's going to take you 10 years.
And some of the in the media were suggesting, well, why didn't he really, drive the bargain about who's going to pay for the wall? I mean, the media that asks these rhetorical questions, they must be idiots. No politician goes to another politician's home base and sticks it in their eye. Nobody. Whether they're Republican, Democrat, liberal, you don't do that.
So, John made 2 points. One was subtle enough that we haven't picked up on it, and that is that there is an underreported vote for Trump. And we've seen that in robocalls. If you do the polling with a computer, actually Trump polls better than human polling. The other issue, of course, is the one that we've just been talking about.
We have lots of calls from Portland, from Burbank, California. When we roll on from Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Donald Trump went to church yesterday. It was in Detroit. He was invited by a pastor of an African-American church to address the congregation. And again, this was another in an effort to reach out to black votes. And some would say it was really an effort to go out to sort of make him a little more believable, a little more desirable to white Republican suburbanites as well. But again, he has talked a lot, even in the speech the other night in Phoenix, he talked a lot about the African-American community and the fact that, in his view, Democrats and big city mayors have created a very difficult situation for many African-Americans, not all, to get a rung up the socioeconomic ladder. Here's a thing, or here's a portion of what Donald Trump said yesterday, and then we want to discuss it.
I believe we need a civil rights agenda for our time, one that ensures the rights to a great education, so important, and the right to live in safety and in peace and to have a really, really great job, a good paying job, and one that you love to go to every morning. And that can happen.
Mike Miller, when Donald Trump talks that way, is he believed by suburban Republicans? And do you think he's believed by blacks?
I don't know exactly how to react, because it isn't going to happen, because the Democrats in the cities in which these blacks live will stop things like vouchers and so forth for students to go to whatever school they can that is performing. And you can't have jobs if you drop out of high school. He promises things. It's wonderful he's promising and saying these things. It can't happen, especially given the Democratic leadership in all the big cities.
Dave Lundy.
Well, first of all, he makes empty promises, simple statements, but there's no – Donald Trump's
right,
biggest weakness for a year has been the same thing. It's a three-letter word. It's how.
Yeah,
how will
absolutely
you accomplish any of these things?
I agree.
So,
well, you talk about vouchers is one thing.
I did.
He said how on
but
this.
But see, you're not going to go with vouchers, because the teachers' unions are against it and the Democrats are in their back pocket.
No, but he gave – I mean –
He gave some house,
and he definitely gave 10 points of house on the illegal immigration. Go ahead, Michael.
Trump has been talking about the difficulties of African Americans throughout the speeches he's made for months and months now, especially high unemployment among young black men. On the how side, he's talked about a pro-growth tax and regulatory agenda, which would create jobs. He's talked about law and order, a loaded phrase. If he were a real professional, he wouldn't use that phrase, but that's the phrase he's used to secure the streets and make these places safe. And he has talked about school choice. Now, Mike has suggested that's a political non-starter, but because that's a political battle you may have to fight.
I would say that if he had begun his campaign with these kind of statements, as opposed to making them when in many African-American communities he's under 3% of the vote.
Charles, that's not a primary. That's not a primary comment.
I'm talking about
where the votes are.
Right.
The votes are not in the
African-American
community.
I understand that. But if he had begun even the general election campaign, which he won when he finally defeated Cruz, but I think the reason.
So does he get credit? Does he get credit for trying?
No, he's damned if he does, and he's damned if he doesn't.
Why would he get credit for trying? He was so uncomfortable with this speech. They scripted every last word that he was supposed to say in this interview. And I'm not talking the talking points. I mean the.
So he's uncomfortable.
And if you saw him.
Swaying.
Oh my God! He looked incredibly uncomfortable.
Looked like a white guy in a black church.
These are not his peeps. And as somebody who's done politicking in black churches all over the place, you could tell when the politicians are comfortable, when they're not. Donald Trump wanted to get out of there as fast as humanly possible.
Maybe he should have talked in a fake Southern accent like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. But no way. So you don't give him any credit for doing it. I'm going to make a comment, and I want to get your reaction first, Michael. Donald Trump has the possibility of doing for race relations and domestic policy what Richard Nixon did for opening up China. You don't expect him to do it, but he may have the desire and ability to change image and be an entirely different Republican than any Republican who's ever been elected, certainly since Richard Nixon.
No.
You don't buy it.
I think.
Do you buy it?
Not a chance.
Does anybody buy it?
It's possible, because what it would look like would be the Jack Kemp, Paul Ryan agenda. And there was nothing new in that sense in what Trump was saying. But
when Jack Kemp was running with Bob Dole, Jack Kemp didn't even help.
That's right.
That's my hope.
But Dave was absolutely correct in saying that there was a how problem. Everybody's not going to – people who work on garbage trucks, and some people are going to, are not going to wake up loving that job. They love the pay. But
let's go to Jason in Washington, D.C., listening to us on Sirius XM Radio. You got a minute and a half. Go ahead.
I'll keep it real simple. First of all, the person you should be listening to on immigration would be the former governor of New Mexico, who probably knows more than these two yin-yangs that are out there. Hillary Clinton reaches all-time lows on approval ratings. This week we're going to have supposedly a debate that's sponsored by the Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans, and they're not inviting the Greens and the Libertarians, which are the non-interventionist anti-war parties, to try to discuss this issue. Again, the control of the media in terms of having a real discussion is the most disturbing trend here, because they're force-feeding the public Coke and Pepsi, high-fructose, current, chemically-laden poison, and there's no real discussion. And to kick back on the stuff about the black community, Gary Johnson gave a speech in Milwaukee, and he called for the decriminalization of marijuana. How many people in the black community have been affected by a failed drug war that Democrats and Republicans have never gotten behind, because they are in the pockets of what we would call the prison police complex, which has militarized our nation's cities around the country and turned them into third world war zones?
Well, as of this moment, it looks like Gary Johnson is still kind of a long field goal away from getting in the presidential debates.
Which
Jill
is very
Stein.
Sad.
It is very sad. I think they should all be in, frankly.
If they're in enough states where they would win that state and add them all together, they could win the presidency. They should be in the debates. And I think Johnson's in 48 or 49 states or something.
He's in 47 officially right
47.
Now.
47.
There's so, three more, but those are going to be no problem. But the key point is the polling companies themselves, when they do them, have you ever seen a head-to-head Hillary Clinton versus Gary Johnson? Hillary Clinton, Gary Johnson versus Donald Trump? What they do is they never make it the first line. And by having the third-party candidate, the Greens and the Libertarians being lower in the ladder, that's the big discussion. You know,
Jason, we've got to move on. We're running out of time on this segment, but thanks very much for joining us. We've got Dallas, we've got Portland, we've got Burbank, California, all standing on the line. We're going to pause, and we will be back shortly from Chicago. 1-800-723-8029. And when we return, we're going to talk about the controversy at the University of Chicago, free speech, and the students of the future at the U of C. Back shortly from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Saturdays at 4:30 and Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Beyond the Beltway continues from Chicago, and 1-800-723-8029 is the phone number. Let's head to the southwest. Dallas, Monica is listening tonight on KLBJ out of Austin. Go ahead, Monica.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it, and
thank you.
Appreciated a previous caller talking about Gary Johnson and the Green and Libertarian parties. I feel like we do our nation a serious disservice when we talk about a binary choice. And when we talk about throwing away a vote, this year of any other one, I think there's been the most dissatisfaction with the two candidates that are available. I saw a poll once that it was like 60% wish there was another alternative. And there is another alternative, and I don't think it's throwing it away to vote for that. And, you know, even if nothing else, voting for Gary Johnson, for instance, who's getting some serious leverage, would give him more campaign money, would give him, you know, more visibility, give the Libertarian Party more visibility in future debates. And I think that, you know, historically we've seen how countries get corrupt when there's a one-party system, and I think we're close to achieving the same thing in the United States with two parties. Right. And there is choice out there for people.
Monica, I agree with you. And again, I will say to you, if you've not heard me say this in previous years on this program, to me, the most important thing on Election Day, when you go home and you look yourself in the mirror, you are proud of the vote you cast. To me, it's not important whether you vote for the person who wins or loses. It's important that you vote for the person that you really believe. And I'm going to share something with you that I've not shared. I mean, I've been doing this show for 36 years, and I don't think I may once or twice in the past have acknowledged, you know, who I voted for. But I'm going to tell you one of the proudest votes I ever made. And a lot of people are going to maybe drive off the road listening tonight. One of the proudest votes I ever cast was for George McGovern. In 1972. In that camp, and by the way, I was for Barry Goldwater in 1964, although I could not vote. Big difference between Barry Goldwater and George McGovern politically. But as honest individuals, I absolutely agree that they were honest and they were running against people that were not very honest. But the one thing that George McGovern said throughout that campaign, and nobody was listening to him, look how he's blown out. They said that Richard Nixon was the most corrupt, was going to go down as the most corrupt president in America. He believed all the corruption that was being charged against Richard Nixon. He believed it. That's what George McGovern said repeatedly, over and over again. And you know what? I believe George McGovern, and I'm very proud of having voted for George McGovern in 1972. I voted for Nixon in 68. I gave him one chance. He disappointed me. He disappointed the nation. And 4 years later, he wasn't going to get my vote again. And so, again, that's an example. You vote for who you really want to win. And if they win, it's great. And if not, You're going to sleep comfortably that night because you did the right thing for your country. James.
I agree 100%.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. You want to make a comment?
I do, because I respect the idea that you vote for the person who you think is the best candidate or the person you trust or whatever your metric is. But here's the thing about this entire push towards third party and saying, well, we need to have a different choice. The fact is that the third party movements in this country have utterly failed to elect anybody to anything. If you want to create a real third party movement in this country, you start at a local level and you move up from there. And the failure to do so, and then just saying, well, we're just going to elect somebody present. The fact is, it is a binary choice. Gary Johnson is not going to become the next president of the United States, nor will Jill Stein. And I think it's really important that we recognize when you're voting, you're entitled to vote for Gary Johnson, but he's not going to be the president. And so by doing so, and this is, by the way, also why I don't think he should be allowed in the debates if he's under the 15% threshold, you're not helping elucidate where these people are and what they're going to where they're going to take our country for the ones who are actually going to get elected. Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton are going to be the next president of the United States.
Mike Miller, your response, because you've identified you're going to vote for Gary Johnson.
Yeah, I understand your point about starting at the bottom. But there's no reason why you couldn't start at the top. Who was it? H. Ross Perot. What did he get? 19%? 20% of the vote?
That's the reason we have Bill Clinton.
And that's why we have Bill Clinton. Why couldn't, with such terrible candidates as these two, if more people actually heard the positions of a Gary Johnson, they just might say, I can't vote for either one of them. I can go that way.
I just want to make 2 points on this. The first is that the United States and Great Britain have a first-past-the-post system. It's designed to take relatively small differences in the popular vote and convert them into fairly large differences in who controls both the Congress and the presidency. It's very hard for a third party to break in. So the normal question about a third party is who do they draw votes from? Second point is this. I think what we really have is the collapse of both parties as real institutions. What you saw in the Republican Party was essentially the overthrow of that party. You didn't see that in the Democrats, but look at what you had. A man who is 70-plus years old from a small state with no legislative accomplishments who was not a Democrat run Hillary Clinton to the very end of that marathon. So you have a kind of collapse of the two parties. It was ripe for the Whig Party to disintegrate and the Republicans to come on.
Michael,
I agree with Dave that the key really is to pick amongst the two candidates who are likely to win for the reasons Charles said. Structurally, the way the United States electoral system is set up, you end up with two centrist parties that magnifies the differences between them, and you don't really have a good chance for a third party to really influence much. If you want to have an impact, you have to become a faction and a group within one of the parties and take it over. The progressive movement, 100 years ago, the progressives took over the Democratic Party and changed it.
Right. In certain states, a third-party candidate, if they are successful enough in a third party, they can flip a state from one major party to the other. So they can have an impact.
Yeah. They can have an impact by denying somebody
that
a
is
state.
Correct. But that is a strategic point to be played, especially if you're fighting to get into the big game. James in Portland, Oregon, listening to us on WUFO. Nice to hear from the Pacific Northwest tonight.
Thank you for taking my call, Bruce. I guess the point I wanted to make is the fact that Hillary Clinton is a liar or not a liar as a private citizen is not a major concern to me, but she lied as Secretary of State. She lied when she was working for us. To me, that is something that is unforgivable. She lied to the American public about what happened in Libya, and she's been lying to the American public about what she did with her email server. And she has continued to lie about that. And I think, you know, to lie as a private citizen when you're campaigning is one thing, but when you lie as a member of the government, that is, I just don't think that is something that the American people should forgive.
James, why do you feel that Hillary Clinton is still leading in all the polls at the moment? Why is it that the majority of people at this moment don't seem to agree with you? I need a 10-second answer.
I think because Donald Trump has been off his game, and now he's back on his game.
Okay, thanks for your call. 1-800-723-8029. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to talk about free speech on America's college campuses. How free is it?
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8029. We're going to switch gears and change subjects a little bit for the next couple of segments. And we have someone with us tonight, Charles Lipson, who has been with the University of Chicago for over 35 years, right? Hails from Marks, Mississippi, and you've heard him on this program for the last 15 or 20 years. But you were an integral part of a movement of things that are going on at the University of Chicago. It involves free speech. It involves the expectations of students going to that university, how much freedom that they have to basically live in a society and in a community where they can give their opinions without feeling that they're being repressed in any particular way. For those listening around the country that may not have been following this story, which is a pretty big story in academia and certainly in Chicago, lay the groundwork of what's happening at the University of Chicago right now and why.
The University of Chicago has always had a strong set of principles favoring free speech. They rearticulated them during the Vietnam War, and then they had another report by a very distinguished liberal constitutional scholar, former dean of the law school, Jeffrey Stone, who reiterated those recently. For the past several years, I had been telling the president of the university and others that our principles were not being implemented in practice, and that was for two reasons. We were seeing students being shut down in their speech. They would go out to make a certain kind of a talk, and people would yell at them and put them down, or there was a debate, and there were posters up for the debate, resolved, we should end affirmative action or resolve the debate. Society had it where there were too many illegals. And those people were called in for sensitivity training. They would have sent them to a farm in China if they'd had one. And what was happening was that there was actual shutting down of speeches. There were three that were shut down on campus last year. And the mid-level bureaucrats in the dean of students' office were actually shutting speeches down rather than saying, this is a free speech university, you can't interrupt people. It was particularly bad if you were pro-Israel, let's say. The Palestinians would come in, and then together with Black Lives Matter and all the leftist groups, they would literally shout you down. And in one case, when they couldn't shout them down, they took out a bullhorn and shouted them down.
Was it always, in the cases where the shutdown took place, was it always a left-of-center group shutting down a conservative speaker?
It was in almost every case, and then the only other case was when community activists came in to David Axelrod's Institute of Politics and shut down a speech by the Cook County State's Attorney, Anita Alvarez, because she had not released the tapes of the Laquelle McDonnell shooting by the police. So that was not exactly a left-right. That was more a racial issue.
Now, you've explained what's going on at the University of Chicago because this debate has been going on all over the country. Mike Miller, we did one more thing.
Yeah. It's important to add the one thing. We sent out a letter last week telling students who are coming to the university, who've been admitted and are now coming, that they should expect to live in a world in which free speech is respected on campus. That's what caused the furor.
All right. Now, at DePaul University in Chicago, there was also been a lot of controversy, and people have been shouted down and speeches.
And it's only the people on the right being shouted down.
Explain what's happening at DePaul University.
Well, DePaul, they're both Chicago and DePaul are private institutions. We can do anything we choose in regard to free speech of our students. We just need to tell the public what we're going to do. Chicago has done exactly the right thing. DePaul has not. It's a wonderful place. I've been there I'm in my 37th year. I love the mission. I love everything about the university except one thing, and that is their protection of free speech. The totalitarians are taking over the universities, and it goes all the way from the students to the administrations. The chancellor at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, just stated, which he can't do because it's a state school, they must respect the First Amendment, that there are certain theories, certain ideas of inclusion, diversity, and respect, that if you don't accept these, that's non-negotiable. You must believe these things that we believe. And if you don't speak respectfully, you must shut up. That's what they were told by the chancellor. So the new thing is civility. I can simply say you're not being civil, and I can stop your speech.
Civility and social justice. That's the other thing. If somebody is on the other side of what the social justice warriors on the left think is acceptable, then they want to shut it down. I had a conversation recently with a student who just graduated Phi Beta Kappa from one of the elite schools on the East Coast. She's going to an elite law school. And I asked her what she thought about free speech, and she said that these historically marginalized groups never had enough access, and if they wanted to shut down other people's speech, that was fine with her.
Absolutely. That's the view that comes back out of deconstructionism, Foucault, and Derrida, and these philosophers of the 1960s. We've gotten
Where did this movement begin?
It began with the left trying to protect
what universities?
Brown and all the best schools of the country. It mainly began there, and then it has filtered down from the Ivy League into the others. We now have schools which have what are called bias incident reporting. A student is prompted that if the student believes that I, the professor, say something offensive in class, that he or she should tell the university and that I'm being aggressive.
In the case of one of the schools where there was a bias incident, these are mid-level bureaucrats. They're the lowest learners of every university. They went into the professor.
Lowest learner being the IRS person.
The IRS.
Some people might have heard lowest learners.
They are the lowest of the low. Yeah, that's a good point. These are mid-level bureaucrats, and they're almost unanswerable. But they can come in, and in this case, on a bias incident report, they simply told the professor to not bring that up again.
Tell the professor what not to talk about in class, though that's the right of the staff.
And it's all done
under
social justice, historically marginalized groups. When that woman at the University of Missouri went up and said to a student reporter, get some muscle, get this guy out of here.
Melissa Click.
This is a... By the way, she's just been hired at a Catholic university, Gonzaga.
Yeah.
And how can this be? How can she
Tell us what she did, because we have listeners listening to us on KXLY in Gonzaga in Seattle right now.
When the black student movement at the University of Missouri decided that they wanted to protest, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with protests. As long as you march around, put up your signs, hold your meetings, all those things are fine. But as soon as you start saying nobody can report on this, if there's a white person who wants to come into the crowd, that would make our space unsafe, all of those things. And this woman, who was a professor in the communication school, came in to stop a reporter and ask for some muscle to get this guy out. Why another university has hired her in any capacity is beyond belief.
Well, let's anybody listening at KXLY, if you're associated with Gonzaga University, maybe you want to call and answer that question. Michael, I'm going to get your reaction. You're a graduate of the University of Chicago.
I went to the University of Chicago.
Okay, where do you come to? Because this is sort of tangentially involved in the what Donald Trump is talking about.
Well, this touches on a lot of interesting things, doesn't it? But first off, I'm extraordinarily proud of the University of Chicago. I've been associated with it since I was admitted in 1981, and this is one of the proudest moments I've had, because this is something that's long overdue. But without regard to kind of my, go U of C attitude, let's step back a little bit and think about, what is this going to mean in terms of funding? What is this going to mean in terms of people who donate money? A lot of people who are alumni, they're loyal, they love this school, but they don't know this sort of thing is going on. And the fact that Chicago has turned the lights on in the room, I think we're going to see these mid-level bureaucrats and the trustees and the senior people in these universities feel the financial pinch, and that's the only way anyone ever changes their behavior.
You know, I know that this is presented as a left-right thing, and in many respects it is a left-right thing, and I get that. But as the token member of the left on the program today, I would like to just very clearly and unequivocally state I stand firmly with U of C on this. I felt this when I was an undergrad at Washington University in St. Louis back in the mid-'80s, where you were starting to see those hints of, well, you can't say that, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And I found it abhorrent in those days. I remember we had people like Mayor Kahana come on campus, the right wing racist
lunatic,
Jewish nationalist leader. And to me, the whole purpose of a college campus is to challenge your preconceived notions, to challenge individuals, to make them, they will improve intellectually if they are challenged, and if they are coddled, they will not. So this whole trend that's been going on, I find so troubling and could not agree with you more. I can't believe somebody hired that lunatic Melissa Clark.
One quick point that I think Dave almost
lunatic
almost
by the lunatic that that's a little we don't really know anything about lunatic.
Okay. That was
here's the big thing.
I'm sure that's some kind of ism. There are 78 isms. I'm sure you
Charles pointed out this young lady didn't seem to have a problem with this. It's not only not just a left-right thing. It's a generational thing. The older people who can, and I'm all of us guys here count as that, who aren't the kids of today. We believed in free speech. This is something that America's all about. The younger people coming up don't seem to share this belief, and it's very, very troubling.
What an irony that the place where the free speech movement began, Berkeley, will be the last place on earth, unless something by the California legislature or something forces them to actually adopt free speech. Because as soon as you make, I mean, I believe in courtesy. I was raised in the South. I believe in courtesy. I believe in civility, but my Lord, I don't believe that you should use those as reasons to shut down people as uncivil as my friend Dave Lundy.
1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we got some calls on this subject. And also when we come back, we're going to talk about Hillary Clinton and some of her email issues. Back shortly from Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-2000. 8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Andy.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. And by the way, before we go too much further, you know we do this broadcast from the Museum of Broadcast Communications at 360 North State Street. And for those within the sound of my voice, on September 27th, we have a very special guest coming. It'll be an evening with Tom Dreesen. We'll be talking about and celebrating a life in comedy. It's Tuesday, September 27th from 6 to 8 p.m. Tickets are $12. You can go to museum.tv to get the tickets. And, of course, Tom Dreesen, who opened for Frank Sinatra for many years, and again, originally from Harvey, Illinois, and I think is the second or third most frequent guest on not only the David Letterman Show, but also on The Tonight Show. An immensely talented guy. And again, if you live in Chicago, you are probably a member of some group that Tom Dreesen has done a benefit for in some respects. He's done a lot for the military. He's done a lot for police and fire department, but also for schools and colleges and universities in the area. He really is an extremely funny guy. He's got a tremendous career in television as well. Tim and Tom, a first African-American and Caucasian comedy team about 45 years ago, believe it or not.
He did quietly, great stories. Too.
He did it quietly.
Great things for community organizations,
yes, he did.
And he did it quietly.
Right, and this is an opportunity for not only his fans to come see him again. It's $12. Again, it's September 27th, 6 to 8 o'clock at night, the Museum of Broadcast Communications, an evening with Tom Dreesen. Let's go to calls. Oh, by the way, before we go to calls, quick, you were going to give us some of the isms. You say there's,
right.
What, 72 isms
well,
that are now...
there's a guy named John Leo. He's conservative, and he follows higher education. And when you're accused of a microaggression... They usually apply some ism to it, either sexism or racism. Mm-hmm. He was able to find 78 isms. And among them, I wrote a couple down, scentism, S-C-E-N-T, if you
What's
wear
that?
Too much cologne, that's that you're imposing upon others, and that's a microaggression.
Oh, yeah.
Speciesism, that you think you're better than your dog. Faceism, that the appearance of someone's face makes a difference.
That's a big deal to a guy like myself.
Yes, you and your face. And there's actually sightism. If you talk about, I see what you mean, that could be insensitive to somebody who can't see very well. Lookism, and the last one is heightism. Every one of these, as a professor, if we have these bias incidence reports, if I were to use some of these expressions in class.
Like, hey, DePaul, Shorty?
Yeah.
Hey, Shorty,
right.
You'd be written up for that.
Hey,
watch yourself.
Yeah, when
hey,
you look shorty. At somebody, I'm a big Hawks fan, and I would refer to Kane as being awfully short for a hockey player or whatever. And DePaul is
look at that face.
Right. And DePaul is considering creating a bias incident report. I could be reported because students are encouraged to turn us in so that we could become more sensitive.
Well, I'm a Mikeist. I have a problem with you, Mike.
I gotcha.
No, look, I have to say the problem with this kind of stuff is you dumb down actual offense. And this is why, and frankly,
not to
pivot back to the campaign, but this is what was so outrageous about Trump's speech in Phoenix. You know, he said a line during the speech. He said that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have been guilty of gross dereliction of duty for their promotion of open borders. Well, first of all, they don't promote open borders. And second of all, that kind of language against the President of the United States is so over the top.
Yep.
And nobody even noticed, because this entire campaign has been about, you know, which things can we get, you know, can we react to anymore?
Do we remember how George W. Bush was described and Ronald Reagan? I don't think that's out of the norm at this point. It's too bad that everyone's so hardcore and partisan, but look,
dereliction of duty.
Well, we did have a movie of George Bush actually being assassinated in office while he was still in office. There was a movie
I think that we ought to remember that there are First Amendment protections in the United States. Basically, you can say anything you want unless you begin to threaten people individually or cause direct harm. As soon as you broaden that out to I would feel bad if I heard that, then anything goes.
Yep.
Because you could feel bad if I say that I don't like bald-headed men and bald-headed economists. And, of course, that's all of them. And as soon as we broaden speech out to don't hurt anyone's feelings, and I do think it's actually a good thing not to hurt people's feelings if possible, but We can't make that a rule on college campuses, and the reason is critical, and students don't understand it. We need to teach, learn, and research in an environment in which even goofy ideas can be put out and people can push back. If you're not allowed to have a free debate. Now, that doesn't mean no evidence applies.
I want to come back to two segments ago. And I totally agree with that. And again, I grew up on a college campus, Columbia College in Chicago, which was very left, and I was very conservative. And I remember I battled throughout 4 years of college at Columbia College. But my question now is, this is what you want on college campuses. You want a free debate of ideas. Why can we not have a free debate of political ideas? I know you don't think the Green Party and the Libertarian Party should be in the presidential debate. Why don't we have that on the broader broader political spectrum?
Because those, and I have to say it this way, those on the left have decided that anything that disagrees with the social justice warriors is hate speech. So somebody actually putting on chalk on a yes. sidewalk at DePaul about Trump, pro-Trump, this was considered hate speech. This is the kind of
a presidential commission says we're going to have the two party. This is a commission mm-hmm. created by the two political parties yep. to keep only the two political parties. Yep. Giving them access to the American people.
I'm sorry, that's not it. And as somebody who has actually helped produce debates for statewide office, the issue is always about what will help the voters best understand their true options for office. And so you establish basic minimums, 5%, 10%, 15%. The Presidential Debate Commission established 15% because the idea was Ross Perot got more than 15%. He would have qualified and he was in the debate.
In your view, is 15% too high a threshold?
I don't think so. I think 15% is the right threshold. Look, if Gary Johnson was the VP and if Bill Weld was the presidential nominee for that party, they'd be hitting 15%. A lot of people view Gary Johnson as a little too quirky, and he's not gaining traction. He has an opportunity to gain traction. He's been out there. It's not happening.
Plus,
you gain traction with exposure, and again, I think 15% is too high. In fact, I negotiated debates when I was at WTTW, and again, I was an instigator of such a debate and a threshold.
I would have been happy to have the first debate at a lower threshold and then move to a higher threshold that we could see if after the first debate. But the fact is, we only have three, and I wish we had actually more.
I'm going to say one other thing. Chicago, on September 26th, which is the debate of the first presidential debate of this cycle, it is the anniversary of the very first presidential debate in this city on September 26th of 1960. Whoa. There has not been a presidential debate in Chicago since. And I am proposing right now that the Presidential Commission and organizations in the Chicagoland area, including maybe the University of Chicago, maybe DePaul University, on the anniversary coming up in 2020, the anniversary of the very first debate in 1960, a presidential debate in 2020 should be in the city of Chicago. Return to Chicago. It's a bipartisan effort. We can get everybody involved in it, but we should be moving towards that in 2020.
Nixon will be tanned, rested, and ready.
And President Clinton will be happy to debate Speaker Ryan at that debate.
Okay. William in Burbank, California. Go ahead. Nice to have you with us tonight.
Gentlemen, let me thank you for your time. First of all, I should really say that Chicago is my hometown. It's the first place that I arrived and made it home, earned my education, and I take a pride of saying that.
Thank you.
But my comment is as follow, and I hope I'm not going to be offending white, black, Asian, Chinese, all nation of Latino and so on. All I'm really going to mention is this: when I came to this country and I became citizen of this country, thereafter when I was getting married, I had to wait for 23 months to bring my spouse to this country mm-hmm. because there was a law, there was a rule, and I obeyed that. When my parents, they came to this country in their mid of their 60s, they had to go and learn English. And respectfully, I say this one as I teach that to my children. We have made this our home, our country. What I'm finding very offensive, it's nothing to do with the, as I said, white, black, Hispanic, woman especially, but as far as what I really am concerned, I see Clinton administration is going to be a disaster for this country, and I say it from my heart because I see all they really are trying to do is to buy votes. And what they really are doing, A, number one, for a wall, every one of us has a door in our house. We lock that door. Every one of us respect police officers, but I'm finding out that respect has gone down the drain. If our board was with the Russia and we were putting that board so we would really find who's coming in and who's leaving this country and what they really are doing. No media is talking about these mothers that they have lost their children that Mr. Trump really introduced. As far as I'm concerned, CNN and MSNBC, they are just biggest bias that I've ever seen in my life.
William, I thank you for your call. We do have to move on because we're at the end of a segment, but I thank you very much for calling us tonight. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Last week, when Donald Trump went to Mexico to talk to the Mexican president, and prior to that, went down to Louisiana with his vice presidential candidate, Mike Pence, to pass out goodies and food and supplies to those victims of the hurricane. Hillary Clinton was nowhere to be found, at least in a public way. She was going back and forth between Hollywood and the Hamptons in her campaign to raise a lot of money. She raised an incredible amount of money during the month of August. Dave, as a political operative who's interested in the optics of a campaign, the impression that I have is that Hillary Clinton, is not working real hard on the campaign trail. Am I wrong?
Well, yes, but I love how these reports that have come out about how she hasn't done any public events conveniently forgot her speech to the American Legion on Wednesday.
Yes, that is correct.
Which was covered live, at least on MSNBC.
As well it should.
Right, as Trump's was the next day. And that she also came out the day before with a major new plan on mental health issues. So I don't think she has been out there. I don't think she's been invisible, and also
what about the Hollywood to the Hamptons?
No. I mean, look, it's not uncommon in the last couple weeks of August for a candidate to spend the time in the pre-Labor Day period fundraising. That said, should she be out more? Sure, but you know, as I've said on the show, I think that she should be having a press conference. But she will be. You've got 62, 63 days between now and Election Day. You will see so much of Hillary, you will be tired of seeing Hillary Clinton.
Is sanctuary cities an issue that needs to be further explored and explained to the American people, in your view, Michael Lotus?
It's something I think if most voters knew what it was and how it worked, they'd object to it.
Why doesn't Donald Trump take the time to explain it to the voters?
Because
he uses the term, but I think most people don't know what the hell it is. If they knew what it is, I think they'd be upset about it.
Yeah.
I don't know why Donald Trump does a lot of the things he does or doesn't do. He should make it clearer. If you're probably right, that a lot of people just don't even know what it means, that local law enforcement and local government just doesn't enforce the rules.
It's a breakdown of the rule of law. That certain laws apply if you happen to be caught in one city and they don't apply if you're caught in another city. It's the same damn law. It's the same federal government. And I think it's an – I think that that's one thing I saw about Trump's 10 points on immigration. I'm pretty sure all 10 except the wall, 9 of the points were current American law passed by Congress and signed by a president.
This is a serious problem.
And not enforced.
The executive branch, the first word is the executive is supposed to execute the laws.
That's right.
And it's not just that there's a failure to execute many of the laws. The Congress is also culpable in all of this because the federal government's role is now so large that there's no way that the laws themselves can be detailed enough. In the case of some of the immigration laws and so forth, they're simply violating the laws. And in the case of one of them, they lied. The Justice Department lawyers lied to a federal judge about what they were doing, and he's remonstrated them. But the fact is we no longer have democratic governance in the sense that so much of what actually rules us are bureaucratic rules passed by mid-level bureaucrats that nobody has the money to fight. I don't think Hillary did anything wrong, by the way, in staying out of the public eye. She's raising money. What is wrong is that it's been, 250-plus days since she's taken a really serious press conference. And at one of these fundraisers, if you were under 13 years old, and you paid $2,700, that is, your parents were really wealthy, you were allowed to ask Hillary Clinton a question. Why the news media hasn't covered that as an outrage when the American public can't get reporting on all these issues, and she's allowing 12-year-olds to ask her questions.
Did they ask a good question?
I think they asked her what was her favorite tree
color?
Was. Barbara Walter could have done that, you know?
But look, I just want to respond in one respect. And I'm all in with you guys on the press conference. But A, she did have a press conference at the Society of Black Journalists a couple weeks ago. Where she was applauded.
Well, that's really
applauded by journalists.
Isn't that rather
not journalists.
Yes, that's fine. Yeah. Nonetheless,
any
they were also members. Yeah, actually, she got in trouble for one of the answers, as I recall. She has done hundreds of interviews. Let's not pretend that nobody in the press has been able to ask her questions. They have. She still should have a press conference.
Let me ask you this question. Where do you come down on the sanctuary city issue? Should any municipality in the country decide to not cooperate in enforcing a federal law?
I don't understand the sanctuary city issue. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. As far as I'm concerned, you're in the United States of America. Federal laws apply unless there's a specific reason they don't.
Good. Hear, hear.
God bless.
But see, it's because of things like this that the system is rigged, not to use Donald's comment. I often try to figure out why do these people love him. I have trouble mainly with his policies and his control of the military. That's why I can't vote for him. But I understand his appeal because I think that the system is rigged. And it is things like sanctuary cities where people can commit crimes and get away with it, where it can't happen, and that she gets away with her emails – that low-level people would never get away with it, that she couldn't even be hired by the State Department with what she's done, and now she's going to be the President of the United States. This is a rigged system.
You know,
I don't get it.
Something that we saw on Jake Tapper's show today, State of the Union, and I think we will probably see it replayed a couple of times in the coming weeks, is the 1995 State of the Union address President Clinton, in which he lays out chapter and verse. He lays out illegal immigration, how illegal immigrants should be dealt with. And if you listen to that speech almost word for word, it sounds very much like what Donald Trump was saying last last week.
Well, the modern
Phoenix,
Democratic
Arizona.
Party is trying to roll back the
yes.
Clinton 90s.
Right. And listen, on that note, I want to thank Charles Lipson and Dave Lundy and Mike Miller and Michael Lotus for joining us tonight on this program. Again, September 27th, Tom Dreesen is coming to the museum, museum.tv for information. Our thanks to Fritz Goldman and Dan Dorfman and Chris Zwick for the production of this program this evening. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Saturdays at 4:30 and Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false. And I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.